Hello everyone and welcome to Words on a Wedding, the podcast that sees me, your host Annie Vischer, interview my wonderful guests about their big day. Together we talk all things proposals, planning, the ceremony, the reception, the honeymoon and beyond. No wedding related stone is left unturned. So whether you're planning your own wedding, you simply love wedding chat, or like me, you're a newlywed who just can't let it go, hit subscribe on Words on a Wedding, play on the episode and get stuck in. My guest today is George Driver, Senior Beauty Editor across Digital at Elle UK and seasoned beauty journalist. She's as at home backstage at Fashion Week as she is interviewing the A-list likes of Natalie Portman and Tessa Thompson. George got married last year, back in July, and I stalked every morsel of an update on Instagram, as did many others, so it's only fitting that she joined me on Words of a Wedding to discuss more of the same. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, thank you for having me. I feel like it's like the ultimate dream job to be like, George, please talk about your wedding for hours on end. I'm like, okay, fine, if I
must. Not that I didn't do that to you in real life anyway, but I've got you back for a second round.
We're both just like, we've talked about our own weddings for ages. Let's do it again in a formal capacity.
Exactly. It was the purest form of an excuse I could think of. So I'm going to start right back at the beginning. For those who don't know, who did you marry and how did you meet?
I love that question because I'm always like, is anybody going to care? I'll be like, Tom.
Everyone's going to care.
Yes, so I married my now husband, Tom, who is really nice. And we have been together for a long time. We're like, it's like I always get really embarrassed telling people because I feel like I'm the horrible, like, long-term relationship that no one wants to hear about when you're in your 30s. But so when we got married, we've been together for 13 and a half years. So we met in, well, we officially got together in first year of uni. And I actually referenced it in my vows that I'm normally really cynical about couples that meet at school or uni because I think they're lame. And I'm like, but that is us. So I'm a big old hypocrite. So yeah, so I think everybody was like, oh, so how long have you guys been together? I'm like, yeah, nearly 14 years. So like, it was really nice though, because I felt like we really knew, it felt like the right time. Like we've always taken our time with stuff. And like, because we were together from such a young age, we didn't rush through kind of the different stages of post-uni work. Like we both lived separately with friends. I lived with my sister and friends and he lived with his friends, and then after that, like when we moved in together, and then it sort of feels like it's really our pace. But we did become the big old cliche of like, when are you going to get engaged? And poor Tom, I think, got a lot of flack for quite a few years about when he was gonna, air quotes, pop the question, which was never like, I think we'd always were very comfortable in our pace and when we wanted to do it. And I still say, like, I never felt ready to be a wife or say the word wife at all until literally when we got engaged, like was right, like the time that I was actually maybe like a year after we were engaged for 2 years. I think a year into the planning, I was like, okay, now I'm fine. Maybe when we got engaged, I was a bit like, oh shit, I need to be a wife now. But it's quite nice because it got to a point where calling Tom my boyfriend when you've been together for so long felt quite silly. And then you're like, oh, I don't know how to level up that terminology. So it's quite nice to be able to say husband. And it makes me feel like a proper adult, which is really silly.
Yeah. Did it feel weird the first few times that you had to say it?
I think we'd sort of been like, it sounds like we kind of practiced saying it to each other a bit at home. And we kind of like, we are cool. We talked like when we were at home, we'd always be like, do you want to get married? And like, yeah, okay, cool, yeah, let's get married. Like, just say, we just repeat things to each other quite a lot like that. And obviously Tom just said my wife quite a lot in his bad boy impression because men.
God, yeah. It's the default.
It is the default. So it's quite nice and, like, I feel quite comfortable saying it now. I think I know some people don't like being, like, a Mrs. once they're married and I haven't changed my name. So people are like, oh, are you a Mrs. then? And for me, the Mrs. doesn't feel attached to a surname. That to me is like a marital status. And I wanted to be a Mrs. rather than a Ms. or a Miss. But obviously everyone, each their own. And just because I didn't change my surname, I kind of felt like that wasn't linked to the missus. Like, we still got legally married. So, yeah, annoyingly, he just stays a mister because, you know, gender politics. But there we are.
Going back, talk me through the proposal. That's what everybody wants to hear about as well.
Yeah, so people are always like, obviously, like, oh, did you see it coming? Or did you know it was going to happen? And like, no, I didn't see it coming. We had decided that we would like to get married. I would say, like, then we bought our flat just before the pandemic, and then the pandemic happened and that sort of changed stuff. So then I wasn't expecting any sort of proposal, engagement or wedding whilst the pandemic was going on. But I think, like, if I'm honest, like, I'd started to get a bit twitchy, you know, and I was kind of like, I would quite like this now. But I'd never, other than like our big conversations where we sort of agreed on like timeline and that we wanted to get married and stuff, I didn't want to sort of harass him. I think it is quite a lot of pressure for one person, and I do think it's like important that both people agree that they want to get married. Like, I personally think the idea of a totally surprise engagement is quite mad. Like, I don't think someone, like, as in, maybe on the day you didn't know it was going to happen, but if you had no idea you were planning to get married to that person, that's insane. Like, I think two people should know if they're going to get married to each other. It got to like July 2020, and I think it was one of those weird in-betweeny times between lockdowns where it was a bit more lax, and my birthday is in July, and we just had like a chill day. He was like, oh, we're just gonna drive somewhere, and I was like, cool. And we sort of started heading out towards where my parents live, where I'm from. But like, that doesn't surprise me. Like, his parents live near there as well, and I was like, there's a lot of the time, like, he loves nature and like being in a field and being near trees. A lot of the time, at the time, we didn't own a car and he borrowed one. So I was like, it didn't surprise me he was driving us out to a space that we couldn't get to normally, especially during lockdown. And he was really like chill. So I was like, it's obviously not today. Like, but like, obviously that's fine. And we went to a place called Ashridge in Hertfordshire, which is sort of about 10 minutes away from where my parents live. And we've been there a few different times sort of throughout our relationship when we lived at home, and we would be like, we would like some nature and stuff like that. And it's just, it's like a National Trust property, but it's just got loads of fields and meadows around it. And we went there, and he'd got this picnic ready, and I was like, oh, it's so nice. And he'd gone to Popham's Bakery because he knew I'd always wanted to go there. But again, because it was locked down, we hadn't got East. And so he'd got one of their picnics from there. Like, it nearly ended in a hospital trip because he'd got oysters, because I love oysters, but he'd never shucked an oyster before, and he started doing it, and I was like, genuinely, can you just stop before you stab yourself and this day is ruined?
So, oh my god,
made him YouTube how to shuck an oyster, then we continued. And then, yeah, we just had a really nice sort of hour or so having this picnic, and then he was like, oh, close your eyes. And I genuinely thought he was getting like a, you know, like a birthday cake. Like, you ask someone because you're going to light the candle for them. So I genuinely thought that was what was happening. And I opened my eyes and it was not a cake. It was a ring. Wow. And he said some really nice words that neither of us can remember. Literally, I think he was like, had such adrenaline in the moment. And I literally must have looked like this. Gawping, by the way, for the people listening, I'm gawping. I also was wearing no makeup and a crappy outfit because I was like, oh, we're just having a chill day. So I and it started drizzling, so I was wearing a hoodie with his cap on, and I was just like, this is the outfit I got engaged in, damn. And like,
that sounds like so rom-com cute though. Nora Ephron.
Well, it's even more rom-com because we literally were like, I obviously said yes, and I was like, yay. And we had 10 minutes of sort of being like, yay, and like you know, smooching and stuff. And then literally, like, the heavens opened and it started like apocalyptically raining, like the most rain. So we had to like run to the car, and then like in the car, it was like, ah, it was like mad amounts of rain.
Did you say, is it raining? I hadn't noticed.
No, although that does remind me, I think when he proposed, I think I said, are you sure?
Of course you did. And then the onslaught of planning begins. So how did you jump into that and how did you find it? How long did you plan for? And was it quite collaborative or did you kind of steer the ship?
I mean, I think with planning things, I always sort of steer the ship, but it was pretty collaborative. Like, we both like put lots into it and it was really shared. I think I naturally enjoy planning things more than Tom, so I took more control of that, but like everything was always shared, I'd say. So we decided, Tom's sister at the time was meant to be getting married the following year, so we were like, well, we'll do the year after. We're in no rush, as you can tell, and it'll give us more time to save and pay for it. And I was keen for it not to like consume our lives, and actually when you've got 2 years, it really feels like you can space it out and not feel like every week you're doing admin to only do with the wedding. Unfortunately, Tom's sister then had to postpone her wedding because of the pandemic, so it never happened, but I'm still glad we did do the 2 year engagement. Again, massive hypocrite. I was always like, why would you have a long engagement before? And now I'm like, actually, it's way more chill. It gives you way more time to, it's more chill with timings, planning, money, everything. We also like, we got lucky-ish, I guess lucky is a bit of a gross word in this case, because it was pandemic, people weren't getting married. So actually, we were able to book a lot of stuff, and because of the like timing, we were able to book a lot of stuff that I think if we turned it around in a year at a different time, wouldn't have been available to us. And also because of the pandemic, we were able to save way more. Like, I think now I would have a smaller budget because I didn't go out for dinner for basically a year, yeah, and like holidays and things like that. So the timing was good for that, bad for everything else in life. But yeah, and then I don't really know how we decided sort of where to crack on from. Like, my friend sent me her Google Doc that she worked from. And so we used that as like a template of like sort of a to-do list, and then kind of adapted it to what we wanted to do. But it was really helpful for things like things that you've never thought about because you've never got married before, of like registrar costs and what is it like submitting your notice to marry and things like that we didn't know about. And she was really good for talking about things like, you know, venues, like are they dry hire? Like, whenever I speak to people getting married now, I'm like, check your venue includes the chairs, because you'd be amazed at how often they do not include the chairs or the tables or the linen or a cutlery or bloody, every time I see a wedding venue that lists the cake knife, as if I should be elated that I'm spending thousands and thousands of pounds. And don't worry, it includes a knife. Like, I'm just like, guys, that's not a bonus feature. Like, just include a knife. I don't know. I think we probably talked about previously over the years, like what we kind of wanted. We wanted like something summery and quite chill. We kind of thought about, maybe do we know anybody that has a house or something that we could kind of hire from them, because we like the idea of it sort of being a house garden party. We don't know anyone with a house. So then I think we kind of looked at different places. Like, I actually looked at location hire websites a lot, so places that you might use for shoots, for films, or even just like editorial that you could dry hire. But like, we just looked into like the admin of doing a dry hire house, and so often you could only use the grounds with the house, you couldn't actually use the inside, and it just got risky with weather. But also things like hiring a portaloo, and I was like, I cannot make my grandma go in a portaloo, and like and a generator to like make, you know, to make sure the higher kitchen has electricity and then the lights. And then, and we looked at a few different places, and then we basically decided we didn't want to do it in London because of, well, partly because of the type of wedding we wanted, but also we just felt like we'd been stuck in London so long with lockdown. I think now I would probably have a London wedding.
Do you?
Well, just because I'm not sick of it, and I think we would feel a lot more into it, but we just had completed our local area by that point.
Yeah.
And we need to get out. As I've said before, Tom loves trees. We wanted to go somewhere like that. And yeah, we put together this Google Doc with different tabs for everything. So any options that I came across for venues or bands or anything like that, put all the options in the tabs with like their prices. It drives me mad that wedding venues don't list how much they are. You have to inquire. I just find it such a stuffiness that is so classic for the wedding industry that you couldn't possibly say money. And I'm just like, just put your rates on there, like, and just be really transparent as well. Even when we did inquire, sometimes it was like, it would be like from da da da, but actually if you have this many more people, it's this much more, like, and it just became really unclear. And it's so silly. I would say with wedding planning, it's like a chicken and egg situation with so many parts of it. Like, you've got to sort of decide on the type of wedding you want, but also what budget you have to work with. So we had to be like, right, what money do we have? We had to do, I guess in some cases, maybe it wouldn't be so awkward, but I find sort of speaking to our parents about money, because we like to be very independent, sort of asking them what they're able to contribute. They very much left us to be proactive with that. They didn't come to us and were like, oh, here's the money. We had to say, like, would you be able to contribute? And yeah, which was fine. And obviously they were very happy to do it, but it's just like uncomfortable because you don't want to presume that they can or will or want to. And especially, like, I found in my family, I was the first person getting married for like a long time. So the generational difference, like, my parents haven't been to a wedding since probably the 90s. And like the change in how people get married now is so massive, and like,
and the cost of it as well.
And like, no, you don't have to do it a certain way, you can do it whatever way you want. But let's say if you are going to have a standard 80 to 120 person wedding, which most people do now, the things that go with it in 2022 that are so expected and normal are not what they used to do. Even things like when my grandma found out that we were getting married outside, she was so baffled that it was not a church or a registry office. She could not get her head around it.
Really?
Like, so things as simple as that, it was like, made it harder. Well, I felt uncomfortable because I was like, are we being really self-indulgent asking them to contribute towards the type of wedding that they never would have had and they didn't have? You know, my parents got married at their house, the house they still have. And Tom's parents got married in, I think, a local church and then have had a village hall, and she wore Tom's grandma's dress, and which is beautiful. But, you know, it's just a different generation's version of weddings, and I felt quite conscious of being self-indulgent about asking them to give us money towards a version of a wedding that they never would have had and maybe thought might be unnecessary, but also then wanting what I wanted. And also they were hugely supportive and they never made me feel like that. But like, there are the bafflement that goes with a lot of wedding decisions is like quite funny. Like, yeah, like my grandma being like trying to explain a venue to her rather than a registry office or a church was quite hilarious, and different things like that. But then equally, my mum was really excited for, you know, wedding dress shopping and things that she never did. So she, there was a lot of parts of like our version of weddings that she was really excited to do. So we probably didn't need to feel so conscious, but, you know, British.
Yeah. Speaking of the wedding dress, let's talk about the wedding dress, because A, it looked incredible, and B, it was one of those ones where I imagine, or I certainly heard a lot of people saying, it's just so you.
Oh, that's nice.
So how did you hit on that dress? How did you find it?
So I set out basically being like, I'm not super bothered about getting a wedding dress, you know, like doing the wedding dress shop thing. I was going to do it because my mum really wanted the experience. And I was like, you know, when else will I get the time to do this? It would be fun, whatever, let's try it. But I was pretty sure I was going to get like a dress off Net-a-Porter that just happened to be a white dress. Like, I didn't want in my mind anything that was very traditional or lacy or anything like that. So I was really open to it being a kind of designer dress that happened to be white. I also didn't ever want to spend loads of money on it. Like, not like nothing, obviously, but not loads and loads. And I know there's obviously such a like emphasis on the bride and what they wear and the budget that goes with that. But I felt conscious of if we were both paying for this wedding, and we paid for the majority of it, like our parents were really great and Tom's parents contributed towards the catering, which was massive. And my mum ended up buying my dress and they bought the booze. But the rest of it, we paid for ourselves. And I felt conscious of a lot of the budget going on my outfit. And let's be honest, Tom was never going to wear a suit that was thousands of pounds. It's not who he is. And it would never occur to him to. So I was like, I was very happy with trying something a bit different. And like loads, there were loads of new sort of like 16 Arlington and places that were doing way more kind of affordable mid-range dresses. And because it was like lockdown and stuff, I'd ordered lots to my house and they just didn't go well. And I literally completed the internet of white dresses. Like any time I had a bath, if I was on my own, like if I had a lunch break, I would be scrolling through like New In on like Matches, Net-a-Porter, the Outnet. Like I basically was telling my phone to serve me ads to help me out to maybe find brands that I hadn't found. And it just wasn't working. Like I basically, they either were too expensive and I still couldn't afford them, or the ones that were more casual just weren't enough. And one of the shops I did have an appointment for was the Fall Bridal, which I chose because they looked just like a bit cooler, a bit more modern. They had some really nice brands. And Shannon Peter, who works at Liberty, another beauty journalist, she had also been there. She was planning her wedding around the same time. And I think we both have a sort of similar vibe and approach to kind of wedding dress shopping. So yeah, I went there and beforehand I looked at what their brands were. And there was a dress that I was like, oh, like, I definitely really like to try that one on. Like, I didn't have that feeling of like, it's the one, but I was like, it's ticking a lot of my boxes and I would really like to definitely make sure I try it on. And when we were there, I tried on a lot. I made sure I tried on lots. Like I must have tried, like in total with the different shops I went to, I think I tried on over 35 dresses.
Wow.
Like so many different styles. Like I tried the most modest, simple, understated, super chic, minimal dresses. And then I tried on, like I went to Halfpenny and tried the big tulle ball gown. I tried one that had like beaded fireworks on, sort of, which were
wow.
Like I tried both ends of the scale because I needed to see which one felt right. And actually the more I did that, the more I worked out that like I kind of wanted something that felt a bit more like you could see me in it rather than like I was really dressed up. Like I loved the tulle and froofiness, and I wear a lot of different silly things in my life, so I was like, it could be this. And when I wore it, I was like, I feel like I'm going to a really amazing like gala or party or ball. I don't feel like I'm going to my wedding. And I think what I would say to people who are looking for a wedding dress is decide what your vibe is. Like if you want to feel like the most amazing dressed up version of you, where you look spectacular and you're like the celebrity version of yourself that day, then go for it. But if you want to feel like you just in a really good outfit and it's a bit more pared back, like try, like I felt like that was the moment that I split it and I was like, right, I'm not the most dressed up amazing version of me today. I'm like kind of just a bit more chill with it. And but yeah, so I tried this dress on as well as loads of others in the fall and I was like, I'm pretty sure this is it. Like, and my sister was with me and she was like, I'm pretty sure this is it. But I was like, you know, I still had other appointments and stuff. So I took lots of photos. My thing is, I'm obsessed with like not standing on a podium when you try a wedding dress on. Do not get on that podium, people. Like stand on the ground, wear a sort of hail height that you think you might wear, whether that's flat or not, and see if you look good in a mirror, because there's no point standing on a podium that raises you up like you're on a step above everyone else and you're 6 foot tall when you're not going to be doing that in real life. Of course I look better in a dress when I'm 6 foot tall because I'm suddenly elegant. I am not an elegant person. So, I literally stood next to the podium in all of my appointments and the women that worked there thought I was insane because I refused to get on it.
It's such a good tip though, because when in life would you ever genuinely be on a physical pedestal? Like,
yeah, of course fabric drapes and sits so much nicer. when you're raised up, but I think it's good to be as realistic as possible. And I tried on dresses with like even the most minor bit of boning, and I was like, no, like, I like things like take note of like what you're liking or feeling and being like, right, that rules out that. Because I was like, as soon as I tried one with boning, I was like, I don't want anything to feel like I'm going to be distracted by being poked by it or being strapped in. And like, obviously, if you want to feel like your body is like going like in and out and you're all twisted in, go for it. But I was just like, oh, okay, so I need to be able to basically not feel my dress on me. That's what I want to do. And then, yeah, I tried on sort of different ones in different places, still obviously searching the internet frantically for anything. I sent my mum a lot of pictures where she said very mum things like, oh, I just think that one's a bit plain, or oh, I just think you look more like the wedding guest than the bride, or oh, I just want you to stand out. She got a bit projecty about her feelings. So when I showed her the one I got, because it wasn't like, it literally was plain white. There's nothing on it. It's, yeah. I refer to it as a pillowcase with a cutout. Like,
oh, please.
And a very well-shaped one, but you know what I mean? It didn't have tulle or lace or buttons or anything. It wasn't a sort of showstopper in that way.
No, and it's all about the silhouette.
Yeah, I was worried that she might find it a bit of an anticlimax. And then, so I found a shop nearer where she lives because I didn't want to drag her to the deepest, darkest depths of Dalston. So I found a shop nearer where she lives in Bucks, where they stocked the same dress. And I did a second try on probably 6 months later. And again, I tried on all these ridiculous dresses just to make sure, and not necessarily ridiculous, lots of nice ones too. Trying to make the most of sort of each different shop had a different vibe to see if the ones they stocked were maybe something I hadn't tried yet. And then I tried the one I liked, that I thought was going to be the goer on last. But like when it was on the wall, I was like, oh shit, like this looks plain. This looks boring. Like compared to all these other dresses, like it is looking kind of nothingy. And then I put it on and then my mum was just like, no, well, that's it though, isn't it? And I was just like, okay, great. Okay.
Oh, good. The validation.
Yes. So it wasn't like it's the one moment. It was a very considered long process. And I did find it, the whole process, quite confusing at points because I love wearing different types of clothes, and deciding what version of you on one day you should be is really tough. So I think just, yeah, going with your gut instinct of like, it sounds so cheesy. I kind of imagined walking down the aisle and Tom seeing me, and kind of what I felt like version of me I wanted him to see, and that kind of helped. Like, that sounds really bad, like I'm putting it in his hands, but like,
no,
the sort of version of me that, like, I don't know, I wanted to look like he was marrying. I don't know, that's weird.
No, I know what you mean. It's that seminal moment, and that it's that moment that's played out so many times and that you're brought up thinking is the big sparkly moment of the day. And that's what you're kind of aiming for on in the first instance, and that's when your hair's at its best and your makeup's all perfect, and that's when everyone's seeing you for the first time on your wedding day, and so you are in control of how you look in that moment, and you want to get it just right.
Yeah, I think also, like, I mean, my top tip also, if you find a dress that you like, literally find images of everyone else that's worn that dress and see how you style it, because I found pictures of people that had worn it with their hair down and I was like, actually, I don't like that. Basically, the way I wore it was based on, I saw an Instagram of this extremely beautiful Mediterranean woman that I do not look anything like, but she'd done a very simple center parted low bun and some sort of jewel earrings, and I was like, I think that's it, I think that's my vibe. And I wear my hair in that sort of bun a lot. And yeah, so then I just got the veil I tried on with the dress in the shop, and I was like, yeah, I don't really know about veils. This seems like a veily veil. I just wanted that simple column, and that seemed to be it. So I probably didn't do my due diligence on that one, but I was like, screw it, we're here in a shop, and buying that one. And then my earrings, I got a Festier as part of my internet trolling. No trolling was done. Trolling. Festier was part of that as well, for kind of seeing if there was basically... My thing with the wedding was like, get as much and as good as we can for the money we have.
And you touched briefly on sort of thinking about your hair. What about your makeup? How did you decide on your makeup?
So Maddie Spencer did my makeup, who is a good friend of mine. So it's quite easy because I was just like, Maddie, free, can you just put it in the diary? Which she kind of forgot to do several times. And I was like, seriously, Maddie, put it in your fucking diary. But she's an amazing makeup artist. She does wedding makeup all the time and her face is incredible. She's like the best advert for her own makeup. And because I'm so close to her and we're very direct with each other, I felt comfortable being very straight with her about what I wanted and specifically what I did not want. Like, I just wanted to look like, I think the brief I gave her was like summery, sculpted, super healthy skin. And
the dream.
For me, that was sort of not doing the kind of more traditional brown smoky eye, which isn't sort of makeup I really wear anyway, and playing a bit more into a bit more modern. Like, we did sort of a peachy pink on my eyes and my cheeks and my lips. That kind of, it was more that like kind of monochrome makeup vibe. And I showed her a few photos that were more extreme versions of what I wanted. And then we did a kind of quite a casual makeup trial at hers, and I was like, make the eyebrows bigger, because I have none and I like them being thicker than they are. Like, technically probably breaking the rules of what is good makeup. Like, Maddie did what she thought was really good makeup, and then I added in edits that felt like me. So she did really lovely eyebrows and I was like, I want them bigger and bushier because that feels like me. And then she did some sort of, well, she went to tight line my eyes. And I was like, good luck with this, mate, because I'm going to cry this off in a second. So, and I did. So we agreed no tight lining, which I know is like a classic bridal makeup trick to kind of help define your eyes. But my eyes are so small, I just watered it out immediately. So we did a light bit of black eyeliner on top instead. But even then in the trial, I think Maddie got quite into this sort of like more vintage cat eye look. And I was like, I don't want to see it. Like, I want it to just be like an illusion of defining. Very blushery cheeks. And then even like on the day, we kind of went back and back and forth a bit. Like, and I'd be like, right, give me more eyebrows. And then like while I was in my dress, I was like, I want more sculpting. So a bit more like contour around my face. And then she was invited to the wedding as well, obviously, and she kept trying to grab me to top my lipstick up, and I was a really bad client and kept being like, no, I don't have time, I want to hang out and drink and talk to people. So I think, but then afterwards in photos, I'm a bit like, oh shit, I'm not wearing any lipstick. But, you know, there we are. Top tip, get the makeup artist to give you the lipstick and keep it in a bag. Yeah. Or your pocket if your dress has
all
one.
Or your pockets, so you, yeah.
Top up your own lipstick. Because then, yeah, like you will actually be able to do that, which I didn't. But, you know, I really wasn't, I sort of forgot to look at myself kind of the whole day, which I guess is a sort of sign that I was having a good time, I guess.
That's such a good sign. And whiz me through the whole day. Give me a whistle stop tour of your wedding day.
So some highlights of what my mum referred to as an untraditional wedding, which is hilarious. So I was like, we're literally two white cis straight people getting married in a white dress and a suit. So yeah. But anyway, I guess untraditional moments were, we stayed together in the house. So the venue was Aswabi Rectory, which I think I probably found on Instagram, but I cannot remember. It was the first venue we went to look at. We did look at others afterwards, but we were to check that we were sure, but we were pretty sure. It's just a beautiful renovated rectory in Lincolnshire. We are not from Lincolnshire. I am not from there. Tom is not from there. We don't have family from there. It is not authentic to us at all. We just wanted somewhere that had like space and green and air and felt kind of different. We didn't want a manor house or somewhere that felt too trad or too dark. But equally, we didn't want to go too sort of urban and have, I don't know, or like too kind of boho-y with a barn or anything. And it really seemed to kind of fit that sweet spot of like more just being like a country house. And the interiors are so beautifully done. And like Donna, who owns it with her husband, they live next door with their kids. And she has just got like the most amazing taste. And I'm quite obsessed with her. So we were lucky we booked it on the Friday. The wedding was on Saturday. So we arrived there, and we quite wanted everyone to be able to stay there. So we had the bridal party, all stayed in the house as well on the Friday night. Me and Tom stayed together. Untraditional. And I feel like our untraditional things are so not actually untraditional. But yeah, we stayed together the night before. I think we were both just like keen to like see each other and have that night before together and wake up together. And I think we both thought it would really help with our nerves if we had any, just to be with each other. I think it's a bit mad to sort of lead up to a really like big, important, kind of scary day where you're being quite vulnerable in front of, you know, a lot of people, especially a lot of people in your life that you don't normally say mushy things in front of, and not be with the person that makes you feel most at ease before that. So yeah, and that was really nice. And our ceremony was at 3. This is something I didn't know. When you book your venue, you have to basically immediately call the local council to see if they've got a registrar available to marry you. And then the time of your ceremony totally depends on that. No one tells you that. So ours had 11 a.m. or 3 p.m. So we were like, we will take 3, which was kind of perfect for us. Like, I really didn't want to wake up at 5 a.m. on my wedding day because I'm such a sleeper. So, yeah, so it meant that we had quite a chill morning. I think everyone sort of started arriving in our room at like 9, and Tom shifty out and went and hung out with his guys. And then we just had a really chill getting ready bit. And like, Tom had given my bridesmaids a gift to give me, and I'd sort of given his groomsmen the same. And I got him, we just did small gifts. I got him a linen handkerchief that I got embroidered by Cresta Jameson with the date. Yeah. And then some of the lyrics from our first dance, which was Simply the Best by Tina Turner. So it says, I'm stuck on your heart on it.
Wow, I love that.
But he's traditionally a big crier. So I gave it to him with a note saying, just in case. And then he gave me a Missoma Harris Reed bracelet, which is, it's the pearl one with the two hands holding each other.
I know which one.
Yeah, which I loved. And he was like, oh, I'd quite liked it because the hand's wearing a ring. And he was like, I felt like it looked like they were married.
Wow.
Just so wow. Cute. Very good. And like totally my style and stuff. So, and I wore that on the day, which was really nice. And I also wore my sort of something borrowed old and blue. Was my grandma had a necklace, which was a super fine gold chain with a little blue diamond flower on the end. But I was like, I was never planning to wear a necklace. And because of the neckline, I really didn't want to interrupt that sort of shape. So instead I wrapped it around my wrist, and I wore it as a bracelet with the one Tom had given me as well, which was really nice. Yeah. And then, so yeah, the morning was quite chill. And I really wanted to keep just like extra people to a minimum. So like so 3 bridesmaids, Maddie makeup. I had Lauren Bell on hair, who is a session stylist that I'd worked with on shoots before, who is just super chill. She literally worked so quickly. She got the train up, did the hair, got the train down, no fuss, was just like great company, far more affordable than any bridal hairstylist that I spoke to, less assistance, less accommodation, less everything. And also just really had like an aesthetic and point of view that I trusted. I didn't want anything fussy and complicated and fishtail plaits with a bun and a thing and a whatever. I just wanted like a low bun that was done well. And she did a great job. And I told her that I wanted to take my hair down later in the evening, because I was changing into a white feathery slip dress by Sleeper, which again, like, trawl the internet, people, get those sales. I got that dress from either the Outnet or Net-a-Porter sale, and it was half priced, and it was not my size, so it was far too big. And I got it and I tried it on, and I took it to the local tailors that I use all the time in Tooting Market. They're called Annabella's. They are the best women, and they do such a good job. And I was like, is this takeinable or is it too big? Because I'll return it if not. And they're like, no, it's fine. And they literally just tailored it to my size. And it meant that I got that dress half price. My earrings were from Vestiaire. They were Simone Rocha. They were half the price they would have been new, and they were never worn. It's just a, I think, like a really good way to get the best of what you can for your money. Like, I rented a Roop, a little white satin Roop bag for the day because I just needed something to put my EpiPen in. So it was near me on the day. And I rented that, which I think was £28 rather than buying one, because I was like, I don't really need another white handbag. The thing I did splurge on was my shoes, because I lost my mind and after completing the internet, still couldn't find any shoes I liked more than it. And I gave myself 9 months of trying to look for shoes that were not them, because I was like, no, I cannot afford them.
I remember the deliberation.
I probably talked about it too much.
No, never.
And then basically, and like I went into, so the Salvatore Ferragamo, and I went into the Ferragamo store in Old Bond Street, and I took Jen George with me. This is how much I shared this process too much. And tried them on, and I was like, oh, they are really good, and they were such good quality leather. But I was like, right, no, I'll go and have a think about it. And they didn't exist anywhere apart from, in fact, like their store. And the sales assistant was so good at the job that they texted me to be like, we've just had it come in a size 3.5. Do you want them? And it was Friday morning and I was quite hungover and they got me at a vulnerable time. And I just texted them saying, yes. And I was like, you shouldn't buy things via text. but, you know, and they were £725. But I'd done a freelance job that kind of covered the cost. But I really tried not to buy shoes that expensive for it because I was like, this is mad.
But I do feel like the shoes are never just for your wedding day, though.
No. So I've worn them so much since then. And actually, I was getting quite annoyed about how long it was taking to get to my wedding day because there was a lot of work events I really wanted to wear them for. and I have worn them for since. So they're definitely not just a one-off wear, but I am aware of how indulgent they were, and not necessarily a realistic purchase, but I lost my mind and a sales assistant took advantage of me.
Over text.
I fully love them though. Like, they're unlike anything I own or have ever seen, and I love them. So
it's that Marie Kondo thing, but in reverse, isn't it? Do they spark joy?
Yeah, like they spark so much joy, and it's so sad and so materialistic, I know. But like, I love owning them. I love that I have them. And I look at them every day, and like all my shoes are out, like in my spare bedroom, in a sort of like quad of shoes. And I look at them every day. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, so our first dance, we had a band, we had a live band, because we were like, when we think about like DJ or band or whatever, like we love music. That sounds really general. Lots of people love music, but we do, and that was important to us. And Tom loves live music particularly, so we always knew we wanted a band. We lost our minds looking at 200 bands on YouTube or whatever website it is where you get wedding bands, and we absolutely lost our mind and basically found two that we didn't want to punch in the face and and that we could afford. And we were just like, right, let's just choose that one. And it was a band called Tropic, and it was just these three guys, and we were like, they seem to play instruments really well, and the guy has a really amazing soul voice, and they do music that we like. So we chose them, and we asked them to learn Simply the Best, but a slow version. It was on Schitt's Creek, which like I think lots of people have seen, and it's a beautiful version. And not to be like, oh, we actually really liked it first, actually before it went mainstream, but genuinely, we used to send the lyrics to each other whenever we were out and we heard the original. I'd send the lyrics to Tom being like, how's no one ever made a ballad of this song? The lyrics are so good. And then that sort of became like a running game with us that we do that. And then we also love Schitt's Creek, and we saw that version and we were like, see? Like, it's such a good slow song. So we asked them to learn that. And then also Lovers in the Air from one of my favorite films growing up was Strictly Ballroom. Like, just watched it too much as a child, and my sister's called
that Francesca. Bit where they're all bopping like this, yeah. At the end,
but yeah, and like the dad is such, is so emotional. The dad starts the slow clap, and then like at the end everyone comes onto the dance floor, and we just thought it'd be a good song to move into that feels like a yay, let's start dancing. And we kind of asked them to learn half the song each to merge into each other, And then on the day, they definitely played the full song of both, which was nice, but I didn't, neither of us had bargained to do a full 3.5 minute slow dance in front of everyone. And we were suddenly conscious that it was not ending and we were loving it. But I was like, fuck, everyone's going to be so bored just watching us two be like, ah, and like doing a bad like first dance. Like we didn't learn anything. It was essentially me just hugging Tom and us like primary school disco dancing back and forth and then like did a few spins. But then I was sort of like, I don't know. I was a bit like, screw it. Like if there's one day when I can just be very attention seeking about having a nice 3.5 minute slow dance with my husband, like it's right now. And we're not very like super earnest or emotional about lots of other things. And I was like, I'm just not going to be self-conscious about this. Like if everyone is truly here to be happy for us and have a nice time, then who's going to be annoyed with a wedding couple that do a full slow dance? I mean, maybe they were, but, and the band sang it so nicely, like he absolutely smashed it. And then, yeah, and then went into Lovers in the Air, which is good. And then I basically immediately switched out my dress because I was like, I loved wearing my dress and I was like quite sad because like throughout the day I was like, oh, I want to wear this forever. But it was so, it got really hot really quickly and I was like, I really want to dance. And like I always knew I'd have a second dress because I wanted to dance without worrying about, like so many people had already stepped on my dress, which was obviously fine, but I was like, this is going to get annoying.
There's always so much red wine on a wedding dance floor as well.
Exactly. And I didn't want it to sort of like just scoop everything up. So I immediately basically went upstairs, ran into my room, basically ran into the feathery dress, brushed out my hair, didn't look at myself as much as I should have, or spend as much time doing that as I should have. And then just because I was like, I will not miss this party. I will not miss 1 second of this party. And just went like, yeah, just ran straight back down to the dance floor. And then, yeah, just had such a fun time. And like one thing we sort of forgot that then like the next day when we were thinking about stuff and like talking through different parts of the day, Tom was like, oh my God. And I was like, what? And he was like, oh my God. And I was like, what? And he was like, I've just remembered we did that dance. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I don't understand. What are you talking about? What dance? And he was like, the dance. And I was like, you know, when you get like the memories are coming back and you're like, oh my God, you're right. And basically, you know, the show The Great with Elle Fanning and Nicholas Holland, she plays Catherine the Great.
Yeah.
We love that show. And we'd watched an episode quite close to the wedding where basically her and Nicholas Holt do this sort of ye oldie, you know, when you like line up and stand opposite each other dance. But because it's The Great and it's kind of like off kilter and funny, they've done hilarious things like crawling at each other like a bear and things like that. And basically we remembered that in like the height of our giddiness, me and Tom had done, started doing that, like crawling at each other like a bear. And then thinking that we were in like a period drama, like clicking, you know, flouncing around each other, and then had just continued doing that. But like the more it went well and the more we mirrored each other, the more we were like, oh my God, we are amazing dancers. This is incredible. And like, there's a photo, I think from like midway through it. And we were just like, and then the next day we were like, oh my God, what must people thought we were doing? Like,
I'm so gutted you didn't get a videographer at this point.
Right. I'm maybe quite happy because in my head it went very well, but I imagine it did not. yeah, I basically just didn't leave the dance floor, but it was nice because like people could kind of choose what they wanted to do. Like my parents kind of hung outside and kind of held court at a table
with
family and stuff, and like were very chill. And like Tom's cousins arrived in the evening and brought like a mad amount of energy where they were clearly determined for everyone to have an amazing time, which was so nice. And then, yeah, just like danced loads, had a really good time. Oh, and then this is what I mean by the like plan as much as you can and then do the oh well on the day, because we'd done a playlist for the daytime background music, which is sort of all our like favorite different songs. Then we had, obviously, we knew the band were going to do a set for an hour. In between, we'd done what we called Mowage Disco One, which was about an hour-ish of, like, songs that we'd sort of done a mix of, like, more, like, oldies but goodies, and some other ones to be like, while like our kind of uncles and aunts and stuff are still there, a bit more like that. Then we need there to be the second hour set of the band, and then there'd be the like about an hour or so, hour and a half towards the end of the rest of the night. And we did a second playlist, which we'd obviously overthought and curated immaculately, and obviously immediately got put on shuffle. So like, it literally, the band finished and then it kicked off with Westlife, which we had fully put on the end for like, once everyone had left, the people that were staying at the house that were just like hanging around being drunk, having a silly time, that was meant for that end of the playlist, and it just kicked off with Westlife, and we were like, well, here we go then. But it went down a treat. But I would say like, other songs that were also on there was Louis Theroux, My Money.
Oh my God, Ollie loves that one.
Yeah, but it's not a song to dance to on a dance floor. So we've kind of like, it didn't actually come on in the shuffle gods. Yeah, and then everybody left, and then kind of the bridal party stayed up and had some drinks. And actually my parents literally have the stamina of a drinking ox and would not go to sleep. And then it got to like 3 a.m. and Tom was like, we should go to sleep. And I was like, okay, fine, bye. But yeah, it was really fun. Oh, and also I feel like I should say, like, when you sort of asked about like kind of how much we collaborated and shared as sort of between me and Tom on it, like he did loads of like really personal touches that were really nice throughout the day. Like, so our menu cards, or invites, save the dates and menu cards all had a Sweet Pea illustration on that he drew. And that was, it was a nice like personal touch, but also it meant we saved a load of money on stationery. So we did only digital save the dates, which he drew the illustration, and then we designed it in Photoshop and I made it into a GIF. And then we put the GIF in an email, which just said save the date. And then we used With Joy as our wedding website and put the same illustration on there. And that was totally free to use. I don't remember paying anything. So, and then when we did the invites from there, so that was totally free. And then our menu cards, we kind of took that illustration, changed the color of it, and then designed it in Photoshop and then sent it to, I think it's literally called printing.com or something as basic as that, and printed them all out there for £30. And top tip, get spare ones that don't have people's names on. And we condensed our name places and menu cards into one to, again, save on space, stationery, and money. So the menu just said people's names, and we printed spare 5 ones in case people couldn't come or changed around or whatever. Also took just a blank tape with us for the table plan, so in case people changed very last minute, we could write in new people.
Such a good point, yes.
And then, yeah, so table plan and welcome board and guest book we got from Papier. I think that cost like probably like £180 all in, and then the £30 for the name or the menu card, like probably £210 for all of the possible stationery.
That's done really well. That's really good.
But I think like you can be it's way easier to do than I think people think. Like,
yeah.
I get like if people really love, like I know people love stationery and formal invites are really meaningful to people and people love keeping them. I think part, a lot of what wedding planning is deciding what you're attached to and what you're not. Mm. We were attached to having like live music and like feeling like really party. But for me, I don't care about someone being able to keep my wedding invite because I'm just not that sentimental. And we had to allocate where we were spending money or not. And for us, that wasn't worth it. And we got creative with finding a way to make it personal and interesting, but free. And I think the digitalness in me as well was like, this way, it's all very not, I don't know, I could keep track of it.
Yes. But like, and you can analyze everything. And yeah.
But like having the illustration on there kind of made it a bit more personal and not too clinical. And like our favors, I wouldn't have bothered with favors because I don't think you need to, but my sister had made a batch of rhubarb gin by chance and we were like, oh, it's really nice. And I was like, would you be up for making that for our favors? So I bought these tiny bottles. I think I bought 90 of them for £40. And then she just made it over like the 2 years we were engaged, and we had a kind of day where we did a production line of filling them, but like she covered the cost obviously of like the gin and stuff, but otherwise like that wasn't a mad expense. We moved the flowers around all day, like top tip, make your flowers work really hard. So like the flowers from the aisle went on the tables, the flowers from like somewhere else went like next to the bar, then when the bar moved, those flowers went onto a mantelpiece, then like they went on the tables outside when people were like there in the drinks reception. We were going to have the bridesmaids' bouquets and my bouquet go on the tables as well, but actually there wasn't space for them. But like I was like, where does your bouquet go once you finish using it? Just goes on a chair. And I was like, well, let's use it on the tables, and actually there wasn't space. But just thinking about how you could make things rework instead of just filling every space, how is it moving around so you don't have to buy more flowers?
Yeah,
just like trying to be like smart with your money, and then very unsmart when a Salvatore Ferragamo sales assistant texts you and you're vulnerable.
life in balance again. And then we're going to end each episode with sort of one or two listeners' questions, but as these are being recorded pre any listeners exist, I canvassed friends, and obviously you're a beauty journalist, so the question I'm going to ask you on behalf of them, because they will technically be listeners, is what are your top three tips when it comes to skincare ahead of your wedding?
Okay, off the top of my head, one, if you're going to change something in your usual routine, give yourself a lot of time to do that and get expert advice on what you should be doing. Don't just try and self-diagnose and guess, and definitely don't change it like the week before. If you've already got a routine that your skin likes, leave it. Like, I don't think just because you're getting married, you should have to change something. If you like your skin and what your products do, then carry on doing that. If there's something you want to address, then I think like get expert advice. Like, there's really great kind of more accessible dermatology services now. So Get Harley is like a digital dermatology service where you can book like a 40 quid consultation instead of having to necessarily fork out a load of money for it. Yeah. Two, I don't know, I personally kind of had in mind what I wanted my face to look like, and if there was something that I wanted to kind of, I guess, like tweak or improve a bit, I focus on those areas. So for me, like, it's not strictly skincare, but like I'd never had any injectables before. I was 32 when I got married. I'm still 32. And I hadn't ever had them before. And I don't think you should have to have them for getting married or anything like that, or at all. But I was like, for me, what I would like is to, in photos, not, like, my eyes are very small and creasy, and I just want to make sure that I'm able to do those big smiles without feeling like I'm going to pick apart that photo because of my crow's feet. And it was just being very honest with myself about what I would do to those photos, and I no way wanted to be negative about those photos. So I thought the better way to do that is to be super self-aware and preempt that, and then not allow myself to be in a position where I would criticize them. And you know, in my job and stuff, it was sort of something I'd considered and seen other like colleagues and stuff get. So I started like in February, I got an initial treatment of some Botox around my eyes, and then Profhilo, which is like a two part, essentially injectable moisturizer. It doesn't change the shape of your face or the movement of your face. It's just meant to really help hydrate your skin, so it's the best it can be. But it doesn't necessarily, you wouldn't have like a transformation. I didn't want any fillers, so my face looked different or anything like that. I just wanted my face to look slightly less, I guess, like crinkly when I was big smiling. And actually that first session I had, my forehead was so flat and so unmovable afterwards, and I didn't really care about my forehead. And I was like, okay, that was too much or in the wrong place. And then I did a top up session in June, so about 2.5-3 weeks before the wedding, and I didn't have any in my forehead. I just had them around my temples, really, what they call baby Botox, which is basically just smaller amounts in specific places. It's not for babies nor different to great dogs. It's a technique rather than a product. And yeah, so I think just if you're considering anything like that, give yourself a really good long lead, because you might not like the effects and you want to make sure your skin doesn't react or anything like that. But yeah, I'm not saying anyone should feel like they have to do that before they get married at all. It was just something that I'd been thinking about and I was like, maybe I'll try it now. But if I hadn't liked it after that first one, I would have been like, oh, screw that, I'm never doing that again. But yeah, and then last skincare tip. So facials, I think people get really into, right, before weddings. I think, again, just make sure you're not going somewhere that's going to play around with your skin too much. Try and like do your research. If you are going to speak to a dermatologist or something, ask what they suggest, because sometimes, you know, overdoing on facials or different products or treatments can do the opposite of getting your skin to a good place. And I think, yeah, if you're going to do facials, just be realistic about what you want to achieve. I personally think, unless you're kind of giving, I don't know, starting like a year before and you're going to be doing like laser and LED treatments to really help change the condition and texture of your skin or tone or whatever, you need to be realistic about what you want. And having a session of 3 facials of kind of over the course of a few months before your wedding can get your face looking in better condition, but it's not going to transform your face. So being realistic about what you want. And it's also just sometimes just a nice thing to do and a good excuse to treat yourself before a really big day. And it might just give you a confidence boost of feeling like you've done something to make you feel your best. And then I went to Pam Marshall at Mortar and Milk the week before the wedding and then the Wednesday before the wedding. I've seen her a lot. She knows my skin really well. I also, mainly my only skin issue is like it being dry as a desert. I don't kind of suffer from any skin issues like acne or eczema or things that might be more reactive. So I could facial that close to the wedding and it was fine. And she knows to, we've worked together a lot before, so it wasn't a surprise. And she gave me a little ampoule of medical grade hyaluronic acid to use on my skin the night before, which is basically just super, super, super hydrating serum. Again, desert face. And she gave that to me to take with me to use the night before. And then I just didn't put anything on it that morning. And I waited for Maddie, my makeup artist, to come and see kind of what, you know, she felt my skin was doing, what it needed. Makeup artists will have their own products to help prep and prime your skin. They'll know what will keep your makeup on best for a whole day. So don't smother your face in products on the morning and really work with them on seeing what your face needs, because you don't want to create like a slip and slide for then a makeup artist to try and give you a base that will then last for 12 hours. But yeah, and then also just like speak with your makeup artist about what skin finish you want. Like Maddie did mine and she said, look, like, I've done as minimal coverage on you as possible because I don't think you need it and I want your skin to look like skin. But if you feel more comfortable with more, you tell me. And I was like, if you think the job's done, then the job's done. But if you're like, I would feel more comfortable with more coverage, tell your makeup artist that. If you're like, I want a more matte finish, like I said, I was like, glow, 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 glow. Like, but if you prefer a more matte finish because maybe that coverage makes you feel more confident knowing that like, if you did have a breakout or a spot or something, that's definitely covered, just say that. Like, do whatever's going to make you feel the most confident. And then also just be like, do a solid mantra of like, I look fucking great, I'm gonna have the best day of my life, and my skin is irrelevant to that. So
that's such a good mantra. I think we should do that every day.
Exactly, like no one's gonna look at me and be like, that bride seems to have one blemish. Like they're gonna see you as a beautiful friend, family member, colleague, or whatever, that is having the best day, and put it into the oh wells. Like that's where it should go if your skin's not the most perfect, and that's what makeup's for.
I think that's the perfect way to round things off. Thank you so much for joining me, George. It's been an absolute pleasure and a total indulgence, and I'm sure this won't stop us talking about weddings for the foreseeable anyway, but thank you for doing it in such a concentrated spurt.
No, thank you for having me. And also I feel like I haven't been romantic at all, and I do really love my husband.
You have, my goodness, the simply the best stuff, come on.
Okay, good. I feel like I got like, and then I loved these shoes.
Thanks so much for listening to Words on a Wedding. If you like the episode, please subscribe if you haven't already, and follow @WordsOnAWedding on Instagram.
where you'll find guest wedding photos and much, much more. Have a great week.